What's so great about? What's so great about?
What's so great about the podcast that asks great questions and gets great answers? My name is Terry.
My name is Andy.
Andy, how the bloody hell are you?
Very well, Terry. Very well. And you?
I too am well.
Good to hear it.
Now, Andy.
Yes?
We've got another guest with us this week. We've got an actor, a sketch comedian, and one third of the Young Hot Guys calendar. It's Killian Sunderman.
Hello.
Killian, thank you so much for joining us this week. You're very welcome.
No, delighted to be here. Delighted to be here and talk about Wes.
Wes.
Big Wes fan.
Wes, as we...
Wes Houlihan.
Yeah, I tell you what, you're
this is the Wes Houlihan podcast, right?
I tell you, you're keeping me on my toes, because I should have said, of course we're talking what's so great about Wes Anderson. This week we're discussing Moonrise Kingdom. Mm. Before we get into that, we normally have a little bit of a what we've been up to.
Mm-hmm. Well, Terry, look, barring me watching people walk through Japan on
two-hour
YouTube videos, that's all I've been watching. So I'm gonna.
Is that what you watch, that kind of stuff?
We were only talking about it last week. We watch so much regularly scripted shows for the podcast. I feel like I just consider it work now. So now I watch things that are just bubblegum for the brain in my spare time.
I like that kind of stuff. I'm addicted to this like aquarium on YouTube. Do you know that little aquarium? It's a very well lit little aquarium. And he kind of just has, they're not even like interesting fish. It's just like tiny little kind of like, I don't know, they're really shit things that if you saw at the beach when you're a kid, you'd be like, that's shit, and you might step on it and go like, shit. But for some reason, when it's like lit up really nicely and it's in and it's in like this YouTube video, they play, I think, like Eric Satie or some sort of French piano guy.
Nice.
Yes. I'm like, oh, this is very relaxing.
Now we're talking.
And you never know what's going to happen next.
Am I right in saying, Killian, I saw recently you did your first live stand-up?
I did, yeah.
How did it go?
Yeah, I did it. It was last Thursday, so it's a week ago.
Right, okay.
Literally just a week ago. It went very well. I was so fucking nervous. Yeah. It was so intimidating just standing in front of a room of people and just trying to make them laugh with your words. Luckily, the other young hot guys gave me a lot of advice, so I was really helped by them. And they actually just gave me some jokes. That's a thing I didn't know happens, but comedians... just give each other jokes.
Really?
And so, you might like say, like, this is what it felt like for me. I'd say something and they'd be like, you know what's funny? If you say this, and like in my head, I'm like, oh, that's kind of a completely different joke, but I'll take that. Thank you.
I'll take it.
You can have that one. I'm not using it. It's fine. You can have that. It's grand.
But the whole Irish comedy scene, you know, the up-and-coming comedy scene or the comedy scene, whatever you'd call it, like, everyone seems very supportive of each other. Like, you always see everyone just sharing everyone else's stuff and, you know, you kind of get this impression, maybe it's more an American thing of just, like, it's real cutthroat and, oh, if he's getting laughs, that's taking laughs away from me or something like that. But it just seems everyone's really, and they always see us popping up in each other's sort of sketches and things like that. Like it's seems like a good sort of community.
Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. It's dog and dog. It's like fucking Game of Thrones out there. No, it's wonderful. It's really nice. Everyone's nice to each other. They're all lovely.
Yeah.
I mean, I am sometimes like, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's like, I'm like sometimes like, why are these people so nice? I don't understand. Everyone speaks so lovely.
It's like, here, but say this joke that, and like they secretly think it's gonna absolutely tank. It's like,
you know, they
like the performance and they went with him anyway. I can't believe it.
And so, how long did you do then when you were up last week?
It honestly felt like 2 minutes, but I think it was about 20.
Wow, that's good.
20
for the first
time.
I
did, like, I honestly thought it was like, I don't know, I stood up, I told my jokes, I thought I'd skipped I thought I'd skipped it somehow by kind of like looping around the wrong bits or something like that. And I took out like I was in a bad state of mind. I was just like, you know, going go like that.
Yeah.
And I took out like a list of all the jokes that I had or bullet points of like places to hit, and I just went through it on stage in front of everyone instead of doing a great finisher, instead of going like, that's all from me, folks. You guys have been amazing. This is I took out a little list and I went, so I've said that one. Yeah, I've said that one. No, that's me. I think I've said them all. Thank you.
I would find that very endearing.
Yeah, very anti-climb.
Oh, yeah. I would find that very endearing. It's like I said that one. Didn't get out. Yeah. Didn't get out with that one.
You just didn't like that.
Because it's a weird thing. Going to see live comedy, I think, is a weird thing because you're pushing your. For me anyway, I'm always like wishing well. You know, you're hoping that like. Well, I don't ever want to see somebody struggling on stage. Yeah, and, like, yeah, I remember like going to see like stand-up comedians in Catch a Rising Star in New York.
Oh.
So it was nobody huge, but like they were funny. And then like some guy said something that like disrupted the comedian, and like he couldn't get back at all. And I was just like, I was just sitting there and I was like, oh, that fucking sucks so much. It was like, it wasn't even like your man was heckling him so much, but he was just like talking loudly at his table, just interrupting. And I was just like, oh man, like my heart was going out to him completely. Like,
it is awful.
When we were at Tony's Vicar Street show a few weeks ago, and it was great. But like my dad was at the show the day before, and like I was sitting there thinking like, Jesus, people are talking here. Like, but I wasn't going to turn around and be like, excuse me, my brother's on stage there.
My baby brother is on stage. Do you mind?
But my dad was. My dad turned around and told someone to shut the fuck up. And she's like, you're so rude and all this sort of, it was almost a scene. And I was like, you didn't. But knowing him, just even him surrounded by people in general, I was like, this isn't going to end well. But,
that's my boy. That's my boy.
But anyway.
Yeah. No, I in like preparation for it, I was traveling around Spain and Portugal for the last 8.5 weeks. Oh, well, nice. I've been back now for a few weeks now. But in preparation, my girlfriend was like, oh, there's an open mic night, an English language open mic night in Lisbon. We should go to it. And we went to it, and it was so, like, I mean, I was trying so hard to, you know, when you actually just want to laugh, and you're laughing at, and they're just like, so I went to the shop, and I'm like, you know, just, because it's just like, it's nothing they're saying is funny, and it's, you're trying to just really, and it was so awful, and then they did like an intermission, and I just like whispered to her, and I was like, we need to get the fuck out of here. This makes me like never want to be in a comedy club ever again. It was just really, but no, I mean, I guess, sometimes it can be like that.
It's a weird public speaking, no matter what. It's a weird thing that, like it's a reason why I guess it's so many people's number one fear. Yeah, like you know, like speaking at a wedding or you know anything like that. Like when you were talking about there, going through your like, bullet points of list, best man speech for a wedding of like 300 people, and like by all accounts it went very well. It was kind of a blur to me, and like my wife came with me, she's like, oh, you did so well, but you skipped loads of your stuff that you had written down. And I looked back, like, didn't talk about that one, didn't talk about that again. It was just like, gotta get through it, keep the ball rolling. Like,
but it's mad as well how much you have to practice it, because I had the best man speech written for Tony's wedding, and then I read it out loud and I'm like, oh, I need like comedic timing to deliver this. Like, I can't just, I'm just talking this and it's not working at all. And so like, I had to completely throw it out the window. I had cards.
His favorite color is green. Because he likes money.
But you kind of assume, like, I would.
Can I take that one?
Yeah, you can have it, Maybe check with whoever wrote Wedding Crashers. But yeah, I'm sure it's fine.
I would kind of assume, like, I know it's wrong to assume, but like, whenever you see like a comedian, you know, online, like, or like who would do sketches and things like that, that you would just assume that like, oh, they'd be totally grand doing stand up, like doing this completely different thing in front of all these people.
I'd say no. I think the people online are the people who didn't think that was the first access point for comedy for them I don't know, maybe not everyone, because a lot of comedians, you know, stand ups also do online stuff, but like I would say the majority of the online comics that I know are people who their first point of kind of reference was maybe trying it out there first, and then seeing, oh, this is something Because I don't know, like, but I don't know, like, me and Michael definitely were like that, and then we're doing this different journey of going from, instead of going from the stage to like internet comedy, we're going from internet comedy to the stage, which is a bit backwards. So yeah. I'm lucky that the path has been kind of done by other people before, so I can kind of learn from that. But
it is funny that, like, you say that, because we had Peter McGann on the show a few weeks ago, and he was saying it was the opposite. We're like, oh, did you miss performing? He was like, no, not really. I actually found that, like, I much prefer doing my, like, Instagram, you know, TikTok stuff, whatever. I can do my little sketches, you know, on it. And I found that very interesting, because I would have thought, like, oh, well, this is somebody that, you know, or if you're a stand-up comedian, that's what you live for. And he was like, actually, it would turn out to be the opposite, which I found very interesting. Yeah. Like,
I suppose once you have a bit of a following online, then you get more sort of fans of you coming to your shows, then, you know, like, that's where I guess that pays off, is that you have people coming who are, they know you and they know your style of comedy, and they're just coming, like, they're ready to laugh. Like, you just have to sort of,
it was so much easier for me in terms of doing my first gig, because I think, you know, there was less of a battle with the audience, like, you know, like, they had bought tickets to see me and Michael perform. They already like us. They want us to see. They know our type of humor. They know a lot of the jokes. They know the references. I don't even need to do, like, hi, I'm Killian. I come from Germany. They already know all that. So I can kind of, there's a lot of self-referential kind of humor. So I was lucky. I was really lucky in that regard.
Point to the wall and be like, look at that wall. Shit.
Yeah. What do you guys, isn't that, oh yeah, sorry, actually, no, you're referencing one of my sketches. I was like, yeah, I can just point
weird
to things.
Thing
and
to say.
Yeah.
Speaking of,
just point at stuff.
Stand-up comedy. There was some sad news this week. Did you see that Gilbert Gottfried passed away?
What was it? What did he have?
He'd been sick for a while. Anyway, I listened to his podcast and I'd seen him on a few things. And, like, his podcast is really interesting because he loves classic movies. Or I say classic, but, like, he loves, like, old Hollywood Universal monster movies and stuff like that. And, like, he would have all these. I think he had, like, Bela Lugosi's granddaughter on and stuff like that. So, like, he'd have all these people on that you're like, wow, there's so many stories from them. Like, and he's been around so long, everybody loves him. Like, every person he had came on loved him. Like, the one when Bob Saget came on was one of the filthiest episodes I'd ever heard. But then he'd have somebody else on, like, he had, not Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner on, and it was, like, a completely, like, much softer, nicer chat, like, reverential.
So, I was thinking of you when he died. I was like, Terry was sad about that.
Because, I've never listened to his podcast, though. Maybe I'll,
it's really, like,
it did seem like this outpouring of, it was maybe the same when, like, Sean Locke died or something. It's just like everyone had a sort of a mutual, oh, I really like that guy kind of feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like, someone just who kind of, there was goodness in him.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Us, for, I don't know, for me and Andy, anyway, when we're kids, you know him as Iago, you know, from Aladdin, you know, like, and that, but then as 100%. I got older, like, actually discovering his stand-up stuff, and, like, that whole, I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary on the Aristocats, Kratz, excuse me.
No, I haven't seen
it. It's that joke where it's like, you know, a family going to a talent agency, and he said, oh, this is our act. He's like, first I have sex with my son and then my wife, you know,
and the whole thing,
the most depraved shit you can say.
It's like, kind of, they're all trying to like one up each other on like who can say the most depraved shit. And like the one they say is the best one ever is the Gilbert Gottfried one, because he, I think it was like the Hugh Hefner roast on Comedy Central. And he was like, he made a like 9/11 joke. And like, and it was just after 9/11, and like people started booing him, and then he's like, okay, and like just like sound, and he goes into his version of the Aristocrats, and like the people are like falling off the dais. It's like Rob Schneider is like literally like creased over, falling off. It's like he's won the crowd back immediately, like even from this
the
thing.
Pro.
I was like, absolutely, like this is the one they talk about.
Come back from a 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. He 9/11 himself, and then he's able to come back.
And then he won 9/11 himself.
That's amazing. But it was quite sad to see now, I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is, yeah. It's awful.
Anyway, Terry, I'll bring it right down there.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, no worries.
Listen, I'm going to take off. Terry, have you been up to that and have you been watching that and that you...
You know what? I've been watching...
It's a rhetorical question. Of course you've been watching.
Of course I have, yeah. But not as much as... our last podcast record, I'd been quite sick, so I'd literally been devouring content while I was in bed. Mm-hmm. I had a nasty chest infection. But this week, I just caught up with Better Call Saul Season 5, because Season 6 is starting. I know you haven't watched any of it, Andy.
I haven't seen a second of it. Is it better than Breaking Bad? That's all I want to know.
It's comparable. It's very...
That's not
I know people
I
that
ask.
Say it is. I wouldn't have it. I'd have it razor thin how close it is. It's really fucking good. Killian, have you ever watched any of it?
No, I don't. I don't like Breaking Bad. I'm not a fan of it. I think it's not for me. Yeah. I
you probably hate this then.
Yeah.
The thing is.
No, I really tried, and I watched maybe 2 or 3 seasons of it.
That's a good.
Which is a lot of time to get to something. But it was. I mean, I watched the first season, and it kind of had like a guy, doing this thing, and then it started. I guess like this guy cooking shit, and every episode seemed like this self-contained almost episode thing. Mm. I liked it. But I was kind of like, I don't like really want to watch anymore. Like one season was fine. And then people were like, no, the second season is really good. And then like I got halfway through and I was like, it's really not doing it for me. And they're like, just you'll get it. The season finale was shit and I didn't like it. And then I was like, I'm not watching this anymore. And then people were like, no, but the third season is when it really gets going. And I think I got halfway through it. And I was like, this is just not, I just don't like it.
I had the exact same conversation with Andy. And I remember saying to you, Andy, when you get to episode 7 or whatever it is.
Now, I did. I was on board then after that.
After that episode, because I was like, there's this moment in it. I don't want to ruin it for you, but you're going to be like, holy shit.
I was. Afterwards. But like, I've got shows like that with like The Wire. Like, I can't get into The Wire at all. And I've watched about maybe 8 or 9 episodes. And it just seems like everyone talks about it all the time as this classic, like, oh, well, The Wire and The Sopranos. And they're always mixed together in the same conversation. And like,
I mean, Sopranos.
Sopranos, yeah, but The Wire, I was looking around, I was like, I don't get it. Like, I didn't understand it. It seemed like the acting it was...
For me, like, bad. I don't know if it might be the same with you with The Wire and stuff like that. It's like, they were built up to be something so amazing that when I eventually watched them, I was like, oh, it is just a TV show, which it is, you know? And then, I've kind of... That initial disappointment I probably didn't get over. And I imagine if I watch it now, it's been like, I don't know, 10 years.
Well,
I probably like it, It's probably a very well-made TV show. But like, I don't know, like it's become such a part of me saying like, don't like Breaking Bad. It just wasn't for me. It's like become part of who I am. I can't go to all those people, all those times and say, hey, listen, what I said about, I was wrong. So I don't want to do that.
Just have a little card before you meet somebody. Just be like, just so you know, hi, my name's Killian and don't like Breaking Bad. the weird thing.
Tattoo.
Treat my hand. Yeah. The weird
don't
thing
talk
is,
to me about Breaking Bad.
Like with Breaking Bad, I think I had watched it before it came to Ireland. Me and Andy used to work in a centre together, and one of the customers who used to come into the shop was Mark O'Rourke, who's like a screenwriter, wrote Intermission and Perrier's Bounty. We got quite friendly, and we used to swap DVDs, me and him, but he's like, here, I got this new show for you. He came in with this thing and he told me the whole spiel of like, it's this great, he's a scientist turned like, his life didn't turn out the way he is and he gets cancer and he decides to cook meth and I was like, wow, and he's like, but wait, he's like, and the best thing is it's played by the dad from Malcolm in the Middle, and I was like, wow, okay, like I'm sold. But I think I watched like that, like, and then the second season, like before the first season had even come to Ireland. So I was telling people about the show and they're like, what are you talking about? This show seems insane.
I find like I hear about shows from you, Terry, like months before. So it's kind of, that's probably why I'm so dismissive. It's because like that, it's built up for months. I'm like, this isn't so great.
I'm not going to lie. If I had like a cool story like that, Breaking Bad would be my number one TV show. Like, there's no way I wouldn't. If like some cool like thing that I knew about that no one else, and then it came on and it was like, you know, rated as one of the best TV shows ever, and I'm like, I knew it before. Yeah. I would be. It would be my favorite.
That's what you're dying out on.
See,
like,
yeah. I'm too fickle in my taste. A cool story trumps whether I like it or not.
Well, it's good to see your man back in Better Call Saul. You didn't have a heart attack or something a few years ago?
Bob, I think he was talking about afterwards that it was like, that was a real like wake up call for him, because he was basically saying, like, they were like, oh, can you do 6 o'clock in the morning, call? And he's like, well, like, I can't really say no. What do you ask me the question for? Like, you're just telling me to come and do it or whatever. And he said afterwards, he was like, I'm not doing that anymore. I was like, and I'm not getting the crew to do that anymore. Because he's like, if I don't show, I'm now number one for the first time in my career, these last few years, I'm number one on the call sheet. Yeah. So I can kind of say no. But like, stupidly, for that period, he was like, oh yeah, we'll
just
do
saying
whatever.
Yes to everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
He's doing lots of movies as well. He was in that, what was that film? Nobody?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, he's just beating the shit out of people.
And getting the shit beat out of him, which I quite like. It's realistic.
It was enjoyable. It got too, for me, he got too infallible towards the end of it. It was like, I would have liked him to kind of, it was just one of those movies where like,
first,
you know,
60 minutes
gonna,
I thought was good.
Yeah.
And then like the last
and then it was just like,
half an hour.
You know, he couldn't lose. He couldn't lose. Yeah. But anyway, like, he made an action movie and was doing this TV show and everything. And
I think it's great because like, I was such a huge Mr. Show fan, and like, to see him like now have this really successful career for himself. Yeah. And like, he can literally do whatever he wants now after Better Call Saul.
I'm at a weird age though. It's kind of like a Liam Neeson renaissance-y kind of age.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't seem like the normal age where someone becomes like a big star or whatever. It's happened to him.
The weird thing about Better Call Saul is they don't, I mean, it's almost impressive to the point where it's like the people that show up in it are clearly older. And you're like,
but they're supposed to be younger.
So it's
I'm just glad they didn't do that de-aging thing.
No, they're just like,
that's like 3D TVs. I feel like in about 10 years, that's going to be like, remember when we did that all the time and
it looked terrible?
Yeah,
it is. It's definitely,
You know?
But it, like,
why did we do that?
But it is weird now, because we've done the whole, myself and Andy on the Patreon, we've done the whole MCU, What's So Great About MCU, and
they did it all right, actually.
But the latest ones that they've done have been like the CGI or whatever. You're like, it's so terrible looking now.
Don't
like
even
it looks.
Get me started
and
on these.
I don't know. If you saw that thing that was going around, people being like, the murder. Is it Murder on the Nile? Death on the Nile.
The new Kenneth Branagh
Hercule Poirot thing.
And they showed
like how bad the CGI looked, and it looked like something from a fucking PC game.
But I have a thing about that, because like, it was like, I watched that film and...
did you watch the whole thing?
I watched the whole thing, and it's very clearly like an aesthetic choice to make it look like
that. Is
it? Like, you watch it. Yeah. It's like...
It still seems mental though. Like,
it looks mental. It does look mental, but it, like, when you watch the rest of the film, in the context of the film, I think they wanted it to look like that.
Huh.
Like they
why?
I mean, it's Kenneth Branagh. I mean, he fucking nominated for like 7 Oscars this year, and then he made that. It was weird. But like, I think it was kind of a fantasy land kind of period piece or something. He wanted it to look very clean. But I don't know, watching that, I thought it was very clear that that was like many different aspects. There's too many aspects, like art department and costume and everything working together to make it look like it looked, it all
deliberately.
Looked deliberate in the same way, part of the same thing.
I miss.
So like the... It was. I think that was
a
like
choice.
What it's meant to look like, and it does look shit. But I think that was
job done.
The intention.
I would like to see like sand in his toes or whatever. You know, I would like to see sand.
Excuse
You're in
me?
Egypt. I would like to see sand.
Oh, right.
You know.
No, I know. It's that. I think it's like that colonial like British imagination of what the Nile is like. So it's kind of not. It's not a realistic.
Out of context, it looks like a fucking point and click PC game. You're like, what? Like, this looks terrible.
But I've been seeing that a lot on Twitter and stuff recently, where people take like a frame from a film or something or whatever, and it can kind of
gets dunked
like
on.
A lot of the times I love it, and I love, you know, doing it to Morbius and all these films that are shit. But like,
have you seen The Good Doctor?
Like, another part of me is like, this isn't but it's
at
like I
service.
Love it, but it also, it's probably not the best way of You can't critique a film from looking at a frame of it or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's not really the way we should be doing
I was giving out about
It's fun, though.
It is fun. It's tremendously fun. I was giving out about King Richard for a long time before me and Andy reviewed it on the Patreon. And I was justified in my criticism of how bad a performance it was.
I was so excited.
Oh, you didn't think it was good?
I thought it was awful. I thought it was.
I didn't like it either.
I thought the movie was okay. I thought the Will Smith performance was so hammy. Like, I thought it was so crazy. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Like,
have you ever seen Richard Williams?
Yeah.
He is quite
hammy, but like, the Will Smith isms of it, like, it just didn't make it a good performance for me. He's like, these kids are working, they're out here working, and like, you know, like, open up your stance. I was just like, what? It was like nails on a chalkboard for me. Like,
the whole thing, like, I was so excited, like, up until maybe 2 weeks ago, I was a big Will Smith fan. And
what happened 2 weeks ago?
You probably didn't hear about it, but it's and I was like, yes, he's finally gonna win the Oscar, like, yes. And like, we did a whole mini series on the Patreon about Will Smith's bad movies over the last 10 years, and I was like, oh, King Richard, though, he's back. And then we watched it and we were like, I was like, I didn't like it. It was too, you know what it was?
Really?
It was like, did you see it first of all?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was like, I watched it and I was like, he's getting it for that. I watched it and I went, they're going to give it to him. Maybe because he's like Will Smith. And
I think that's what it is.
They like their narrative where he's like, two times he's been very close to getting it. And then I was like, they're going to eat that up. And I was the same as you, Andy. I was like, oh, you know, it's Will's Oscars.
Yeah.
So this is it. Like, we're going to be... And it was, and like, Will's Oscars.
It was. Even though I didn't think he deserved to win for it, I still wanted him to win it for it. I was like, because I just love him. I just win it. And then it's not what I expected at all. But
I was listening.
Still happy with the outcome.
I was listening to a podcast that put a lot of things in perspective for me. I listened to Blank Check podcast, where they go through a director. And they're doing Sam Raimi at the moment. And they had John Hodgman on to talk about The Evil Dead. And he said how when he was tweeting about how Anthony Hopkins shouldn't have won the Oscar for The Father and Chadwick Boseman should have won it Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And it, like, people were like, oh no, the performance, you know, the merit of the performance. And his response was, this is not boxing. There is no point system on it. They should have given it to Chadwick Boseman as a posthumous Oscar because it was the good story for it. And I'm like, maybe I need to stop taking these things so seriously because it is scoring, just pretend, like, you know.
Like, effectiveness.
Have you ever seen the, they released some of the... I think they interviewed like 50 of the people who like make the decisions of the Oscars, and like half of them haven't even seen the films.
The worst.
A lot of them just talk about like the movie. They got movie. How much money it made? I can't remember what one it was. They were like, that was on a $5 million budget, and it made $100 million. I mean, what a movie! I don't know. Like, the whole concept of ranking art, anything, and kind of going, this is number one, this is number two, is just so dumb.
Yeah.
And I like the film festival format, like Cannes or something, where you might select the film that was very special or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. Yeah,
it's kind of,
you have to just treat it as a bit of fun, like, otherwise.
Yeah, that's the thing.
If you take it seriously,
I was kind of saying, Andy, I had a very toxic relationship with the Oscars, and I think I'm finally getting over it. It's an abusive relationship. Let's be honest. I think like, my favorite director is Paul Thomas Anderson, and like, I was looking up, he's been nominated like 13 times and has not got one award.
Really?
He's nominated in screenplay, direction, you know, and he has never won an Oscar. And I'm like,
wait, he himself?
Yeah,
like,
his films have won. Like, There Will Be Blood won cinematography and production,
acting.
Yeah, and acting. Yeah, but he himself, when he's been nominated, and I think every, bar maybe Inherent Vice, all his other films after Boogie Nights, he was nominated for Best Director or Best Original Screenplay, and he's never won. And I'm like, I don't know, like that to me kind of sums it up. I'm like, well, fuck this, you know, like he didn't win this year.
but it sums it up because the guy you like hasn't won.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So I didn't invite you on this podcast. Like,
my
favorite
film is Lord of the Rings, and that's won all of the Oscars, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very abusive relationship. They're not giving my guy the award.
He's the best, though.
Yeah. How was the match? Terrible. My team lost. That whole sport is a farce.
Terry, have you got anything else before we kick off?
No. Oh, I think we can probably get into a review of Moonrise Kingdom.
Great.
What kind of bird are you?
I'm a sparrow. She's a dove.
No, I said. What kind of bird are you?
Dear Susie, here's my plan.
Dear Sam, my answer is yes.
Dear Susie, one.
Dear Sam, where?
Dear Susie. Walk 400 yards due north from your house to the dirt path which has not got any name on it. Turn right and follow to the end. I will meet you in the meadow.
Who's missing? Shukuski, you in there? Jiminy Cricket, he flew the coop.
Walt, where the hell are you?
Right here.
Does it concern you that your daughter has just run away from home?
That's a loaded question. Tell Hepburize I'm deputizing the little guy, the skinny one, and the boy with the patch on his eye to come with me in the station wagon.
C'est le temps de l'amour, le temps des copains et de l'aventure.
What am I looking at?
He does watercolors, mostly landscapes, but a few nudes.
If we find him, I'm not going to be the one who forgot to bring a weapon.
Me neither.
Where's the boy?
I'm told that he's just been struck by lightning.
It's true.
I'll be out back. I'm going to find a tree to chop down.
That was the trailer for Moonrise Kingdom, the seventh film by Wes Anderson. It was written by Wes Anderson and Roman Coppola. Guys, we want to do a little bit of BOF.
Box office and fun facts, sure.
Yeah, well, why don't we start with the budget? Killian, you're our guest. I'm going to give you first guess at what you think the budget for this film might have been.
Well, this is Wes after he's made a few box office successes. I'm going to guess he's getting a fair amount of money for this one. It's focus features. It's going to be 45 million. Big. Guessing big.
Now, Andrew? Look, I'm not just saying this because he said 45. I was going to say 40.
Okay.
So 40.
You're going to get it because I think it's lower.
16 million.
What?
Is actually his lowest budget since Bottle Rocket, because Darjeeling was 17.5 million.
Fantastic. Mr. Fox surely had more
budget
than he?
Yeah.
And that was a hit.
Yeah, but I don't, like, that's what I mean. So, I don't think it...
He just didn't want it. He was like,
it's fine. We did terribly there.
Yeah, really bad.
They were both really bad guesses.
Okay, off to a flyer.
I was doing like a nice like educated guess there. I was like making it think like, but then it made it the worst guess
Putting the pieces
ever.
Together.
Yeah.
$200
like
million. Dollars.
Maps going across my eyes. So I'm going to put a... Put it at a cool $1 million.
So we normally go with opening weekend.
Okay.
But it's I will tell you, this has a very strange rollout in terms of... it ran from the 26th of May to the 1st of November, but never played in more than 900 theatres.
Why?
I don't know. But... Look, this opening weekend had four theatres, right? So if anybody wants to take a guess.
Four. So the weekend numbers of four theatres.
Yeah, take a guess. Take a stab at that.
20 grand? I don't know.
I'm going to go maybe, 18 grand.
172,000.
Way off.
Yeah. What, in how many theatres?
Four theatres. It's a pretty good.
That's good.
I'm doing really bad. What's the scoring system here? Because I'm doing it's very
just fun.
Badly.
It's like the Oscars. It's just a bit of fun.
We usually allow like a 5 million
Look,
leeway
for these last
technically
two.
We were right there.
For these,
if it was closer, if whoever's closer, you've been closer both times.
Yes, I suppose I have.
Killian, don't. Yes, okay. So for domestic total, Killian, I'll let you go first.
He's at a real disadvantage.
Sorry, you're going first.
No, you're going first.
I think it's a real disadvantage whoever goes first.
Yeah. Because you're allowed to go first.
All right, Andy, you're going first.
Yeah. Make Andy. Yeah.
I'll say 6 million.
Okay.
No. I misunderstood the question.
For 6 months. No, it made 172,000 its opening weekend. I'm going to say 6
25 million.
Okay. It ran first from May to November.
Okay, so you're getting the sort of summer. It was a big film as well. Mm. I remember it coming out. It was a big deal. I'm going to go with a budget. Let's say a successful film is it makes back its money plus that again.
2x, 3x. It's a nice.
Yeah, something like that. So I go 3x. So I'm going to go somewhere between 50, maybe 55 million.
45 million.
Who's closer?
What did I say?
You said 25, you say? Andy.
So, oh, I'm winning.
Okay, you're winning that
nice.
One.
Unfortunately, you didn't get within 5 minutes, so I can't give you any points. But you have
the moral victory.
Yeah, the moral victory.
Yeah, no.
Okay, worldwide total. 45 million domestic, worldwide total. Andy, what do you got?
92.
Killian?
Your eyebrows raised there. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I just feel like that's a lot. I don't know. Like, I feel like he's big in Europe, but only on the sort of the.
I've bottled it.
Like the art film scene. I don't know. I just feel like that's a lot, but I don't know. I'm gonna go 75 million.
68 million.
Ooh, okay.
That's so close to within
five.
Okay.
Again, no points, but moral victory for you, Killian.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Victory I look for. Yeah.
I mean, that's what the trophies are.
You've severely overestimated how popular Wes Anderson is there.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm so clear. I'd never even heard of this movie before we were looking at this series.
It seems that whatever way they're, like, if I'm looking on Box Office Mojo here, like, it just was racking up, thousands every week in small theaters, like, and again, running for 6 months. There was never.
Like, why wouldn't he just release it in, like, 10,000 theaters? Well,
you tell me.
Is it that simple?
No one wants to see it. Like,
I guess.
It's really interesting that, I don't know, we talk about Wes Anderson so much and he has a very big profile, but he's not, people don't go watch his movies in the same way. Like, there's teenagers aren't going, the new Wes is.
Yeah.
You don't get walk ins in the same way that.
True.
Like, they just wouldn't be able to fill it.
But seems like a very clever. Strategy, although it did make $89 in its last weekend, so that kind of tells you where you are. But
literally 10 people,
that's very sad.
Okay,
they make their money on the popcorn,
they just want to get you in the door.
All right, you got any fun facts?
I've got some fun facts, Killian. I have this book.
Here we go.
My wife got it for me, my big book of Wes Anderson. It actually
that's amazing.
Goes up as far as Moonrise Kingdom. So Moonrise Kingdom is the last.
What are you going to do next week?
I bought the expansion pack, the same author.
Is that what that Grand Budapest thing you sent me was?
Yeah, the book. Yeah. So he's done a book like this just on Grand Budapest, and he did one on French Dispatch as well, which I'm yet to buy, and I don't know if I will, unless I can take it out of the podcast funds.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, there you go. You heard him.
Is that a yes?
Yes. Sign those checks. He didn't do anything on Isle of Dogs, I don't think. Probably wasn't worth his time. Anyway. He got the idea about setting the film on... this island while visiting his friend Wally Wolardowski. You guys might know him as Kylie the Opossum in Fantastic Mr. Fox. Visiting the Isle of Nashuan, which is in New England, and he said basically there are no cars permitted on the island, a lot of things are not allowed to be changed, And he liked the idea of there not being anywhere like it anymore, even though it was quite commonplace in years gone by. And it's kind of cool mm-hmm. that it is like something you would never see.
You might see it
off the west coast of Ireland or something, but like...
The fact that cars are banned there.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, he's no cars are permitted.
But he did seem to opt to have cars in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's
they have cars
a plot device.
The movie.
But like,
that's a great thing. Like, they have no cars on the island. I'm going to make a movie about that. Yeah. But with cars on the
island.
But
I will be putting the cars in
the island.
The
only common thing is
that
they're both islands.
Yeah. he states that the film is not based on his own childhood, but of like the idea of a childhood romance that he wished he had experienced, one that blindsided you when you're in like fifth grade. He's a bit of a loser, it seems. when writing the character of Susie, he had the idea of her being a reader, but also maybe that the movie itself could have been one of her books in her suitcase, like a story that she could have read. So like almost one point, if she opened her suitcase, there'd be a book of Moonrise Kingdom in there, which I found quite an interesting idea.
I could see that, yeah,
because it's sort of like a fairy tale, maybe. Or
both
of the leads were cast after their first audition. He knew as soon as he saw Jared Gilman, who plays Sam, that he was the guy. And with Cara, who played Susie, she read the part as if she was completely making it up. She was the only one that stood out, as in like, oh well, it's not as if she's not reading a script.
Oh, right.
Which I think is pretty...
The rest of the kids were shit.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it seems that way. Like,
it's like, no, you're reading the script. I want you to pretend like you've never seen these words before in your life.
What do you want?
Next.
Here's the script. Don't read it.
Christ, you're amateur.
Get out of here, Bill.
Bill Murray standing at the door. He said he doesn't want you.
Hit the bricks, kid. Last note I have is the scene where the children are kissing in their underwear was the last shot of the film and on a closed set, so it's just director of photography and Wes Anderson there. The reason why he
seems
did it,
weirder.
Does it? I mean, you invite, invite 50
like,
people
no, you
to
go.
Watch
you all go away over there. Only I may stay for this. Go on, kids.
Well, when you look at it through that lens, yeah.
Yeah, literally, the camera lens.
He's not Stanley Kubrick.
Zoom in on that.
He's not Stanley Kubrick, Cantwell. Like.
Okay.
We're not recording. Oh, sorry.
the reason why he said he did it last was so that the kids would be more familiar with each other and it would feel more authentic. They'd have had the whole shoot to get to know each other.
Okay.
Essentially. Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were fun facts.
Thank you.
Yeah, they actually were. Yes. They're good facts.
Yeah, man.
I think you're going to ask the same question, but I was very curious as to know, because we gave you a few options as to which movie you wanted to come on and chat about. Now, granted, a few of the big hits were taken, but why did you pick this one, or what was it about this one that made you want to talk about it?
I guess I'd rewatched a few of them recently. I was on... I don't want to spoil. I know you're allowed to talk about other Wes Anderson films within.
Yes.
Is that's allowed? Yeah. But but I was a big Wes Anderson fan, and I'd watched the French Dispatches kind of recently, and I really hated it, and I was really like trying to remember a Wes Anderson film that made me the issues I had with that was I felt like it was so. Like, it wasn't emotional enough
it's
for me.
Not
it was just very, like...
accessible, yeah, is just, it? Like, you know...
Yeah, it wasn't very accessible. It didn't let me in. And I was like, when was the last time the actors were kind of allowed to have a bit of a performance? And I think this is the film, maybe after Royal Tenenbaums, where I thought the acting was the best. I think the two kids in it are unbelievable. And I think I really like... I don't know. I liked all the acting in it. I thought that was maybe why I was like... I wanted something that was a bit emotional or something.
You know what's so nice about this film? Before we jump over to you, Andy, because we're just talking about performances. Seeing Bruce Willis locked in, and he's fantastic. Like, you know. Yeah.
He's brilliant.
And it's so sad. We were talking about it a while ago. We were talking about all his, you know, money laundering movies that, you know, he's showing up in. Give me $1 million. And whatever else you're doing, like, they all just seem like a front. They don't seem like real films, you know. It's for and now the sad news that he has, what is it, dyspraxia that it like affects the speech and the brain.
It's some sort of thing that he can't. What is it? I don't think you can speak or communicate language. It comes debilitating or something.
And apparently, you know,
it's awful.
Apparently, that had been for the last few years quite like he would have like an earpiece, and you know, he was getting confused and stuff. So it made me feel like a real shit. Being like this guy
who's the funny guy, Terry.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I would say I was not poking fun at his expense. I was lamenting the loss of one of my favorite actors in a humorous way.
Yeah. Seemed pretty cutting to me, to be honest.
But the Razzies thing was rotten, pretty intense. Like that was really like. I mean, when I first saw that, the Razzies did, for the first time ever, I think, they decided to do an entire section of their award, which was just, which is Will Smith's worst film of 2021, which just felt a little bit like on the nose. And then, like, obviously, with everything that happened, like, obviously, it was, like, so such a horrible award to make. And then, instead of, you know, immediately going, like, this is so awful, I can't believe we've done this, they wrote a tweet saying, really sorry to hear the news about Bruce Willis. That must be why his films were so shit, or something like that. What? Something along those lines. And everyone was just like, okay,
fuck off. Like,
stop doing the Razzies now. Like, we love that guy. Jesus. Don't,
but, like,
you know,
it's. It makes you think. It makes me think when I saw the. I think this and Looper were the same year. And you were like, wow, like, oh, he still has it in him. And
yeah, they were popular.
You think back to, like, you know, like Die Hard's one of my favorite films of all time, you know, like unreal like performance in that, and then something like The Sixth Sense, which is something completely different but still like fucking unreal, like
when he was locked in he was always good, and like you said, he was really locked in this one. Like I was like the whole time when he was on it, I was enjoying seeing him on screen. It wasn't just phoning it in.
Now, Andy, that sounds like a positive to me. So
wait, did you like it?
I'm just gonna get it out of the way. I actually loved this one.
Yeah, and I knew it. I
loved it. But I'll tell you, it's the best one that I've watched so far.
I figured you out, Andy.
What is it? Please tell me my process.
It's the Wes Anderson movies that are more plot driven. The one that you like, Zisu, he's on a quest. You like this one that is kind this of one, plotty. It's not like, aimless, like, you
that's
know.
That's the thing, because the other ones was like, you and the guest, whoever it was, would be like, I wasn't that great, I wasn't this great. And I was like, yeah, thinking about it now, I suppose that was pretty good. But at the time, I'm like, what am I looking at here? I'm like, it's funny. Yeah, I can see that's a funny joke and that looks cool and all this, but I wasn't like, oh, I'm really loving this. Whereas in this one, I think I got it exactly as I was supposed to for the first time. I felt like a bit of an outsider watching the other ones, like, yeah, I didn't pick up on that actually. But yeah, now that you mention it, whereas I think with this one, I felt from the start to the end that I was invested in it and I was enjoying it. And yeah,
I like hearing that because I feel like Wes Anderson at his very worst, it feels like it's a film that maybe like a room full of snobby fancy people think is really good and you don't understand.
Yeah.
I think that's like at his worst, and then at his best, I think it's like films like this where it just it's like hitting you
it's
in
undeniable.
A weird place, and you're like, this is very pleasant to watch. This is very nice and engaging, and I'm enjoying it. It's just a very nice. There's a niceness about
it. I think
it seemed
like his warmest movie so far. You know what I mean? To me, anyway, it seemed like, you know, I was, you know.
It's not mean. There's not a lot of meanness in the movie. Yeah. It's very earnest. Yeah. Even though there's quite sad things happening in it under the surface. But, like, he gets the pitch or the tone, whatever you want to call it, so, like, perfect that, like, you can't help but, like, root for everybody that's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like it was the same kind of sort of, you know, the dialogue is quite deadpan and stuff like that, which normally I found quite off-putting or quite like it just didn't click with me, whereas this one just seemed different. It seemed like a totally different kind of movie. Like if anything, I feel like this movie would be more accessible to kids than Fantastic Mr. Fox was. You know
Definitely.
What I mean?
Definitely. Yeah, because I mean, Fantastic Mr. Fox is not. It doesn't feel like a kids' movie. Whereas this, you're talking about something that nearly everyone goes through, which is like this thing. Yeah. this thing where you know you get a massive crush on someone and it hits you like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
When you're that age, and it's that whole thing, and it's talking about that. But imagine, you know, it's kind of a fantasy. Like imagine you did do all those things.
Yeah.
And everyone's had those, you know, fantasies of running away when you're like fucking, I don't know how old the kids are, like, you know, that age, like, you know, 9 or 10 or whatever, and you have these feelings and you're like, oh, what if I just like did this?
Yeah.
You know? But he does the things. And he's a badass.
I would have eaten this up in my early teens.
If
I was like 12 or 13, this movie would have defined me if I was 12 or 13.
you would have just shown up with your Davy Crockett hat the next day.
Just walking into school, pointing to girls, going, "No, what are you? What bird are you?"
Yeah.
It's like, please leave me alone. Yeah. No, what? No, okay. No, what bird are you?
Specifically, though, what bird are you?
I think from like we were talking about throughout these like the scores in all of his films, and like how I have been such a huge fan of the Mark Mothersbaugh scores. You know, the first four movies, and then it was for Fantastic Mr. Fox, Alexandra Desplat. He does a lot of them in this, but there is a bit of Mothersbaugh back in this one. And I noticed that like at the start, I was like, "Ooh, here we go."
I've totally seen him on the credits already.
Yeah, he's in the credits, yeah. But majority of them are Desplat as well. And like, it was something that I found, like when the two of them meet up and they're going, you know, you see them like climbing up the rocks and stuff like that. The score at that part, I was like, there's something foreboding about this. Like, as in, like, oh, they don't make it seem like, as in, oh, they know exactly what they're doing. It's like, she could fall at any moment here, or, you know, this could happen. I was like, almost like had me weirdly smiling to make it seem as in, like, you're not trying to, like, pull one over on us. If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is, there are stakes
here.
Before we get to the giant storm or whatever like that, like there are actual things that, like, if two kids ran off and did this, you know, there would be
dangerous.
What I appreciated about it was like the kid story was that there wasn't any, like, I feel like when I'm watching movies now, particularly if there's kids involved, there's always some sort of weird, like, it feels like anyway, some sort of darkness or some really foreboding, some adult thing that's been shoehorned in. I like that the kid stuff was very sort of innocent. Like, and they kept it innocent, even if, you know, even if they had trouble and there was that gang of kids after them and stuff like that, and the parents looking for them and all that. Like the kids part, it just seemed like I was never uncomfortable watching these two kids act or talk or whatever. You know what I mean? It just seemed very nice.
I was worried you might be like this little snot boy or whatever. You know,
I liked them,
but then I was like, but he's not really precocious. It's not like fucking Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone or something like that, where he's like quippy or anything like that. Like, you know, he's,
I'd be more. I'd be more thinking Jason Schwartzman is the snot boy.
I mean, he's still. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, but that's his character, and until he shows his growth, he is a snot boy. Like, snot boy.
But
I really like the character. He looks like a nerd at the start, but he's actually a badass.
It's
nice to see that
he's so,
like,
confident,
kind of someone who's presented like it's, you know, kind of scouty or whatever, but he's actually like really cool and confident and a bit of a rebel and all that kind of stuff. Like, it was cool. As an ex-scout, I really like that representation.
Represented, you
know,
as well,
typical narrative of what a scout does, you know. It was nice to see that.
I never made it past the beavers myself, but you made it to scout. Fair play, like, well done.
Nice.
Ah, well, you know.
I did laugh, like, straight away. I was laughing at, like, when Ed Norton is looking
so
for
good. He's like, again, another person,
and
he's going
through the different things and all, which is great. He's like, it's too high and all this, and then like the fact that he goes into the tent and he doesn't even see, like, clearly you would see that hole from the outside. He just pulls the thing down like he's escaped. Like, you wouldn't see that on your way to the tent. It's like, where is he?
Jiminy Cricket, he flew the coop. I love when he says, they go, what's your real job? And he goes, I'm a math teacher. And then, like, a few seconds later, he goes, I want to retract that.
Yeah.
My real job is scout leader. I'm a math teacher on the side. It's such a nice... The line, the writing in it is really... I think the lines are really,
like,
funny.
It's weird because the one we... So, we recorded Fantastic Mr. Fox a couple of weeks ago, and we just recorded Darjeeling last week, and Roman Coppola, Jason Schwartzman, and Wes Anderson wrote that film, and they've dropped out Schwartzman, and it's Roman Coppola and Wes Anderson. And I'm like... it just, this movie works so much better. And I'm not saying it's because Jason Schwartzman's not there, but
I'm not saying that.
You're saying that I'm saying that. I'm not saying that. But it, the screenplay is phenomenal, I think. It's so, like, it's, it goes at such a clip. Like, and the the casting of Norton is, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot how fucking good an actor Ed Norton is.
No, it's full of all the regulars, but then Edward Norton and Ben Stiller just, or sorry, wait. Stop the pod. I can't remember.
So like Bruce Willis?
Bruce Willis, sorry. Yeah.
But like, you see, like, because I was saying, Andy, it's fascinating to watch him build his troupe of players. And like, if you look at like Life Aquatic, he brings in like Willem Dafoe. He brings in Jeff Goldblum. Like, he's kind of getting these bigger stars apart from just
Meryl
his friends.
Meryl Streep,
George Clooney. Mr. Fox, George Clooney. And like in this one, you bring in Frances McDormand. You bring in Harvey Keitel. You bring in
Frances McDormand? In-
she's the mom.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
you bring in Harvey Keitel. Yeah, you're bringing in Bruce Willis. You're bringing in kind of these like Oscar-winning, you know, huge actors. The line.
Yeah.
With Harvey Keitel, when your man comes up to him and he says, you know, he's lost his trooper. He's like, who is this bimbo? Oh my God.
It's just great when Harvey Keitel's there. Yeah,
but the use of the word bimbo and the way he says it with his mustache and all, I'm like, oh my Lord. So
it was great seeing him in this.
He's so good.
Like, yeah.
But like, like I was saying, Ed Norton, he brings this like weird vulnerability, like he's almost like, you say, a child, like that answer you say, like where he's like, I'm a math teacher on the side, is it an answer a child would give you, like, you know
so I have to say, I was when I first seen Ed Norton, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I really like him, but like by the end I did like him again. You know what I mean? Like I feel like I've been conditioned, I don't know why, to just, when I see Ed Norton movie, I'm like, maybe it's because of The Incredible Hulk or something, but I'm just kind of like...
But apparently he's famously a bit of a bollocks, though, like, in fairness.
Yeah, he has a bit... He has one of those kind of, like, a bit of a punchable face.
Yeah.
He does have a bit of, like...
I was like, oh, this guy, but he was... Yeah. He was actually grand.
I think it's weird how you've, like, an actor and a director, like, you find are really suited to one another. And I think in this one, and he's in Grand Budapest as well, and it's like, it brings through like an earnestness or a goodness in it that like, he's almost like a simpleton, but like not completely, but you're like, he's just somebody who just, you know, is innocent. He's an innocent in both of them. Yeah. And it's like, I don't ever know if I've seen him portray that as convincingly before in this. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't think so.
And then
I think the acting, like, with Wes Anderson is off, like, because he has such a specific style that he likes people to act. I feel like the performances that I like the most in his films are often the ones where it feels like they are doing far less of that, and they're kind of allowed to interpret the role a bit more. I feel like that's kind of what happened, like in Royal Tenenbaums. I know he asked what's his name again?
Who's Hackman?
Gene Hackman. I know he wrote that for him. But I feel like Hackman kind of made it his own, and it was a very kind of human performance. Yes. And I find that the more human Wes Anderson is, actually, it's the more I like it. I felt like there was a big problem with Dispatches. And, you know, I just feel like when the people are actually a bit more rounded rather than this kind of like stoic kind of like
model that he's speaking, created, like
it just, and they're like these plastic things that he's moving around. I that's when I like it less.
Yeah.
And I like it more when they are actually a bit more human.
I mean, that's what I've actually found this time around. A Royal Tenenbaums always kind of gets me. There's a few bits in Royal Tenenbaums that always gets me, but like there's a bit in Rushmore that like, I'm like, wow. Oh, like there is this, like it punches out of this, you know, lovely Wes Anderson diorama, and then there's a bit that like just punches through. They're like, well, I'm going to start crying now any second, you know. Now, like,
yeah,
was there a bit that made you cry in this? Oh no, let me rephrase that. What bit made you cry in this one?
Terry's a crier.
Which bit?
The bit that got me was at the very end where Bruce Willis is like, how about it, pal? when he's holding out the hand, and I'm like, yeah, just fucking take his hand, man. Like, just,
I knew you were going to say that.
It's
fucking, that was,
it's so
was,
good. Like, that's the undeniable, like, everything is coming together at this moment where you're like, you know, they just want to be together. You know, she's going to take him away. You know, they're talking about fucking electroshock and all this. And then, like, Bruce Willis, this sad, lonely, you know, policeman who doesn't really have an awful lot going on.
He's so likable in this. Like, that's the thing. Like, again, like,
dogness, like.
Yeah. And also, can I say as well, Bill Murray, just again, like, it's like he's, like, he always seems like he's just perfectly cast or does the, he has the perfect role for him.
He's
in
on
every movie,
that, like, he's tuned in on that, like, frequency to whatever character. Yeah. Like,
and
in,
like, that's,
he's an arsehole in this, like, he's an arsehole. Like.
But, like, Bill Murray, like, famously, like, he's got this 1-800 number, and the only way that you can reach him is if you dial the number, leave a message. If he wants to get back to you, he will. And if he doesn't, he won't. And, like, but Wes Anderson, he says he always answers the call. I just love that for, I'd love that for myself. But, like, even this one where him and the wife, he's like, oh, you must be up to here by now. It's like, I don't think so, counselor. It will take you 3 days at least. Like, well, I'm not going to argue about it. Like, as Bruce Willis,
I guarantee you that's an ad lib as well. Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And the little things, like, when he's, like, I know we're kind of jumping a bit, but when they catch them in the tent, Bruce Willis going from standing to just running at the tent. Remember, like, when he catches them, like, they open the zip and they're all standing there.
Yeah.
And then, like,
Bill Murray.
Bill Murray, I can't talk. And then he just, goes full clip.
It's really dude.
It's just a full...
Train's coming off the track here.
My favorite line is just when he says, I'm going to go outside and chop some wood.
Yeah.
I just think there's kind of like a croak in his voice, the way he said that. I was like, I don't know how an actor can... I don't know, you know, like when someone trips up and it's hard to like trip, like how can you like
convincingly
kind of just go, I'm gonna go outside and chop some wood, and he says it's so realistic. It was just really very good.
But I love like he's topless and the pot belly is there and he's got the axe over the shoulder he has like a bottle of whiskey in his hand or whatever, like I said it to my wife, I was like, he still looks pretty fucking good, like that's a good look, like.
Was, yeah. Like, and like how old, like this is what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, 10.
2012,
yeah.
Wasn't it? And how old is he now? Like he must be in his 70s
now.
He's in
his 70s now.
Yeah.
I'll get you the age now, okay?
Please do. But
He's such an interesting guy, Bill Murray. He's kind of like this, he like exists outside of acting as this sort of mythical character who kind of shows up and... I know he's like always like at high school parties. I remember in like Facebook era, you'd see like photos of Bill Murray at like high school parties, and you're like, I didn't see that.
Imagine he just showed up to a gaff party.
You would be king of that school.
No, but even just like if we were at a gaff party or something, and Bill Murray just fucking, I was over in Ireland and I decided to like, I heard noise come from this house, so I came over and see what was going on. Like,
I
just partying
like
with Bill Murray for the evening, like.
But I would feel like I don't want to bother him. I don't want to bother him. He's over there, but I don't want to. I don't want him to hate
That's
me.
That's you all over, man. That's you all over. Yeah. Never take any risks.
So the way I do it is, I'd be standing over there going like, I'm not going to bother him, but he's gonna look over and see me and go, oh, that lad's sound. He's not bothering me. He's gonna be able to read into that. He'll look
he'll
over,
figure
and go,
me out.
Oh, he's sound. I might look at him and kind of nod to him or something, and I'll go, oh, that lad's so sound. He just sort of kept and played it cool.
Here's what you do, man.
Completely overthinking it.
You go and offer him the joint, and then you're in.
That's like, still the
get
joint.
The hell out of here.
Who told you I smoked weed? Get him out of here.
But yeah, and then like this, like he doesn't have an agent. Like he took the role of Garfield because he thought it was one of the Coen brothers. It was a different Coen brother.
It's like Ethan.
And he talks about it openly.
As opposed to Ethan Coen, I think, or something like that.
It's like Cohen instead of Coen.
It's Etan, and it's like Cohen. And then as opposed to Ethan Coen. Like,
oh, come on, that's close. Yeah,
it's an easy mistake. Yeah,
he could have asked one person.
His agent. You know. He could have asked his agent.
Yeah, doesn't even have one, doesn't he? Like, he doesn't have an agent. Doesn't have a manager. He just, I guess, these mistakes happen when you don't have those.
I'm sure, he could have asked.
He's apparently missed a lot of.
Clooney.
He's missed a lot of big films though from that thing. I think there's a long list of films that. Bill Murray is missed due to his unorthodox setup.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's totally fine with it.
That's ones. It. Like, it
was, I think he's grand. Yeah.
Got that Ghostbusters money.
I have to say, out of all, as much as I like this one, though, the music was the only, was the lowest part of this for me. Normally, it's like, the music's always great, the visuals are always great, but in this one, like, it still looked great. It wasn't maybe as vibrant as his other ones, but that's obviously deliberate. Like, there's a lot more sort of greys and greens and, like, you know, that sort
of
stuff.
Very, like, but, natural, like, yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't really care for a lot of that choiry sort of music.
I liked,
you know,
it. I really liked
it. Yeah, I thought it fit. Yeah. I felt it kind of, for some reason, like, there was, it's like that age when you are in fucking choirs and then, you know, they're doing the scouts and it feels like part of that, all the organized things that we make kids do.
Yeah.
And, like, I just kind of tied in thematically for me. Also, we had to sing that old Abram Brown one.
Right.
I remember that.
Wow.
We were made sing that. I can't remember. I don't know if you had to do that, but, like, we had to, like, sing in a choir.
We had to.
It was some sort of choir thing.
We had
For a confirmation or something.
Yeah.
No, like, it was, there was a set of songs that, like, all Dublin, I think Irish school kids had to learn or something. I don't know. Maybe I was in a weird school.
We went to
Here I Am, Lord, and these sort of ones.
No, they weren't religious. They were like non-religious songs. So yeah, yeah.
In our school, Andy, I'm sure you did this because it was always in my classroom. Me and Andy weren't friends in school.
Quite the opposite.
Actively disliked each other, actually. Like, yeah. But we were each other the same year. Although it was only when we started working in the centre together that we became friends. But we had to do a choir. But instead of doing that, like you say, religious stuff, it was like contemporary songs. So it was like M People, Search for the Hero,
Mike and the Mechanics,
Mike and the Mechanics, In the Living Years. What was the other one? Working Man, I Am. Underground, is that?
I only remember In the Living
Ground. And no, I swear to God, if I ever see
ours were like
the
weird, kind of like maybe like show tune. I don't know what the the brand of it. It was like, you know, and we will raise you up, that kind of stuff. Yeah. It was really like
it's church
God,
adjacent, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It was like, yeah. I mean, nuns were still making us sing it, but, like, it wasn't about God. It was metaphorically about God.
I remember, like, people being, he was asking, like, what song, any of the lads, would you have an idea what if you wanted to sing a song? And somebody was like, I Believe I Can Fly. And he was like, yeah, I'm not really a big fan of that one. And then the next person was like, Gotham City, like another R. Kelly song. He's taking the piss, like, see your justice, see your peace, Gotham City. I was like, if
Woody.
That's the best joke. Like,
is your dog called Buddy too?
No, he's called Woody. Do you have
Woody? No, I have a Buddy. Sorry to derail Terry, but
yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, no. I got excited there. I was like, hey.
They're a dog.
but yeah, maybe, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what
I quite liked
about.
As well, like all the like Hank Williams stuff that's just kind of softly playing. There's no slow-mo, you know, contemporary
pop song
dropped in.
No Rolling Stones, needle drops.
I like the Frenchy kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that was cool.
60s French, Francois Hardy kind of stuff. I like that a lot as well.
I like the collage, because they're going in the river and stuff like that. Like,
go on, give us a song. Go on,
I loved I sing all the time to Andy's displeasure.
I thought you were going to say, I sing all the time to Andy. Like, yeah. It's not like a sound. Just calling you up, I can't sleep. Terry, sing that song you like to sing. And just leave the phone by the pillow.
I'll do it with Roy Orbison for you. And I drift away.
Not sleep yet. You try hang up. I'm not sleep yet.
Yeah. All right, what do you want
to
hear?
Switch to adult contemporary.
I need a hit because I'm going down.
Yeah, now you're talking. Oh, very good.
What is up here? Yeah, drop.
But speaking of, like, I didn't, at the start, for the first half an hour, I was thinking, like, what? Like, when is this set? Like, this
65,
one. And then I was like, oh,
they
tell you. Oh, it's clearly 60s. And they probably said
they
it
say
a
it
few times.
Because you have Bob Balaban, who's the narrator, which is fucking great. I love that touch. And then he appears in the movie, which I found a bit confusing, but also
who was
quite
he in the movie?
I liked it. I liked how quickly they started the film. I'm a big fan of. I like one of my big irks with films these days is they take maybe like 30 minutes, 40 minutes to start.
Yeah.
Whereas this was like a great one of those films like from the 80s or whatever. It's just like straight away. Here's the film. We're going.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
This is the camp. They're over here. These are the two people there. They like each other. It's straight away, and then you have the narrator just telling us. Set it up straight away.
And it was 90 minutes, which I always, always appreciate.
If you can make a film this well in 90 minutes, then chef's kiss.
Yeah, I feel like more people would have just gone the traditional, well, we'll make it an hour 58 and we'll add that 25 minutes of backstory at the start.
Hour 58.
No, there is.
As long as you're using your minutes and it's not, you're not giving me nothing. You know what I mean?
Mm.
There are so much nothing.
Well,
2 hours. Yeah. 2 hours is 2 hours is excessive.
It's not, Andy. You spend 2 hours watching people walk around Japan, like
but you never know what's gonna happen.
You don't know what's around the next corner.
It's another road. It's another road, Andy.
I saw that guy earlier. I swear. I know that lad.
No, seriously, I know him.
One of my favorite pieces of Wes Anderson filmmaking ever, I think. I saw on this was the letter writing sequence.
I was just gonna say yes.
I loved it so much, and like it gives you so much information about the kids, like, you know, how they're, she's like, I get in fights in school or whatever, like, and it, but it cuts off, you know, shorter and shorter each time,
and it gives, and it feels like it cuts off at like a juicy bit, but you still get many of them that you just you piece together what their lives are like. And there's a bit in that specifically where he's saying he doesn't get on, that I was cracking up at, where he says something like, you can't hear what they're saying, but like he says something to the kid and the kid turns around and he's like, and then he punches him.
Yeah.
But like the kid is just so confident, like even the way he looks up, like he's still like, I'm still saying what I'm saying or whatever, you know.
I did also like the letters. That there's some of those letters were precursors to the emails that we do nowadays, where it's like, hi Brian, yes, when? Regards, they do, like, hey, do you eat when? Great, thanks.
Yeah, it's literally regards, like Killian. They get to be in like one liner letters that they're posting to each other.
Yeah,
and it gives you,
which we do,
yeah,
like that's the thing we do.
Thanks. It's like, something pops up in your inbox, is like, oh, kind regard, thanks for that, kind regards. Like, don't send a fucking email for that. Like,
look forward to hearing back from you means you haven't heard the last from me. or a big pet
gadget.
A big pet peeve is when they say kind regard, like I'd sign off, I was writing a letter to you, be like, it's like, whatever, kind regards, A. You know, I feel like it's so fucking pretentious. Like, or somebody said, they'll say, KR instead of kind regards, A. You can just call me A.
Woodrow.
You can just call me A.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, but, I've done that a few times, and it's so embarrassing. I when I was like a teenager, not now. Like,
I just don't feel right.
Call me K.
Font 72, like a big elaborate K. I tell you, I was a big fan of just the way, like, you know, the way when they start getting together and all this, and the I'm not going to know any of the names, but the boy says to the girl,
Sam says to Susie, yes.
Yes, okay.
Ooh.
And he's like,
I know my name.
He's so confident. He's like, I'd like to pitch camp by 1600. That's 4 o'clock. How's that sound?
Yeah.
You know, like, he's so, like, just taking charge of the situation. Like, you know.
I love their interactions together. Like,
yeah.
And then even as it gets on, and she's like, I'd always like to be an orphan. You know, all my books or whatever like that. Like, you know, they always have the best lines, and he's like, I love you, but you don't know what you're talking about. And then she's and she's like, I love you too. And you're like, oh, like these two little troubled, you know, kids.
Like, she didn't get hung up on the, you don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, what do you mean I don't? It's just like, oh, she picked up on the I love you there, like, you know.
Yeah. And that was such a sweet, there's another bit that got to me. It's such a sweet scene where she's reading to him and he falls asleep. And it's just his head is in her lap. She's read her book and he's asleep. And I'm like,
absolutely.
Well, I get what you're saying about the kind of, like, I hadn't thought about it, but that it is, maybe it's like an area that maybe is tricky to maneuver or whatever, like to talk about, like, you know, two essentially children falling for each other. Like, that's maybe that's quite a difficult thing to and like with the way things are, I guess, like we worry about, like, in real life, that would be, people would be thinking really horrible things.
Yes.
Like the kids, boys run off with a girl. Fuck. Like, this is horrible. Yeah. This, you know, and probably rightly so in many cases. But like the innocence and the niceness of this was like, it was really refreshing.
Yeah.
It was like, at no point was I like,
it wasn't uncomfortable.
Thinking anything seedy or
there was no weirdness. Like, there was no coldness about it. It was, you know, and they weren't concerned. They were, you know, having fun.
There's literally a scene where like he is feeling her up. You know, he has his hands on her her nerve breast, and she's like, "Oh, they're gonna get bigger or whatever." Excuse me. That was perfect timing. Talk about comedic timing.
Brilliant.
Excuse me. I'll be right back. But like that whole I was sitting there and I was like, oh, I actually don't feel uncomfortable watching. It would be very easy to make this kind of like seedy or unnerving or whatever like that. Like, but like, I think the work they do in the whatever 20-30 minutes beforehand between the two of them kind of puts you at ease, you know.
Or
puts
it
you,
doesn't seem
like you're rooting for them. Like, I keep saying that, but like you are, and like, They stack these odds against them. You know, they have the parents looking for them. They have the whole Boy Scout troop looking for them.
Yeah.
Which is just, when they show up and they all have these weapons and their balaclavas, and so it's funny. Like
club with the nails.
He's like, I'm not going to be the one that shows up without a weapon. Yeah. And they all get these ridiculous weapons.
A very young Lucas Hedges playing the guy on the motorbike who gets the scissors into him. He's good back then, like, you know?
Yeah, he was. He's good back then. Manchester by the Sea.
Lady Bird. He's in a but like, I think that was his big year because he was up for the Oscar for Manchester by the Sea, I think.
Yeah.
But like,
I was laughing at that. That's just the fact that it was a stabbing. I was like, whoa,
scissors in the back, like, and you just see them all like running down the hill, like, ah, shit, like, you know, like, what
silently,
because
like because the movie like lures you into this innocence of the kids, and then the stabbing just seems even more like, oh, shit, I'm back in the real world again.
The poor dog gets it through the neck as well. Like,
sorry, my dog is right next
to me. Hey, Woody.
Keep that down to Woody. It's okay. Hey. No dogs were harmed in the making.
It wasn't a real dog, Woody.
They were. That was something. Wes was like, "I'm sorry, we got it. At least one dog needs to go. It has to look real. It has to look
if
real."
If I can't shoot a dog through the neck, could you at least give me a cat to strangle or something?
Yeah.
Wes is insistent on this dog thing, guys. I really don't think this movie's going to get made without it. We've got a 15-year-old very sick dog.
Okay. And I guess
the best we can give you.
And by the end of the film, like, you know, like that's almost a very slapstick moment, and like by the end of the film, it's gone completely like absurdist almost. When, you know, you get the tidal wave, and
and the character who's just called social services.
How great is that?
Like, it gets really like they kind of go, "Fuck it, we're gonna go further."
But like, you get the tidal wave where Harvey Keitel almost gets washed away, and then like all the fireworks going off, like that had me in stitches. That it was like, oh yeah, it's just like this. For some reason, we have a bunch of fireworks here, and they're all going to explode after a tidal wave comes down. And then, like, you know, he gets struck by lightning, all these things that you're like, oh, but then they just kind of play it straight, and for some reason, works. Mm. Like, it works so well that it's not like he's like, I'm okay, let's go. You know, and this like runs off, like, or even when they're kissing, like, you still have lightning in you. He's like, sorry about that.
I wasn't ever thinking like, oh well, what's this? Like, you know, he holds up a flag and he gets hit by lightning, sort of thing. But I liked,
to think that as well.
Yeah, and I don't know why I didn't think that, because I'm prone to be like,
in it.
What's that? What is this?
Magic of the movies, like, Andy.
Yeah, all right.
The
whole Ed Norton, like, because he's like, now he's lost his whole camp. And then he redeems himself with rescuing Harvey Keitel.
And that's the jump is, it looks fucking great. Like, I'd say, like,
it does look good.
Yeah, it's a good jump. But it's also a very believable jump. It's not like insane that, like, you're like, how did he do? Like, he could have
just good form, like, you know what I mean?
Would either of you have, like, a definitive favorite scene in the movie, Terry? Would yours be the letter writing?
I think that the letter writing sequence is really top notch.
I think for me, letter writing.
The letter writing, and then I'm just trying to think, like, there's a smattering of, like, smaller scenes. Like, I love the scene with Bruce Willis and Jared Gilman when they're, like, in his house, and, like, one of the lines that actually I was like, wow, like, it's brilliant writing is he kind of says, oh, we knew we'd get in trouble when we ran away, but we did it, and something happened when we actually met each other, something that we didn't think would happen. And Bruce Willis turns around and he says, like, all men make mistakes. It's our job to make sure you don't make the lethal ones or the deadly ones or something like that. And I was like, wow, like, this guy who, like knows nothing about kids, it seems. Like, you know, he doesn't have a lot of stuff going on, but he just had that, like
packed away.
But it's not like almost... Like, everybody should know that thing. You know what I mean? Like, everybody should be like, oh, well, yeah, we have to protect these children. Whereas all you've seen so far are people, like, talking about these kids, how they need to protect them, but they don't give a shit about them.
Yeah.
And you have the one guy that, like, he's sad and alone, but he knows this universal truth almost that, like, this is, like, if you saw a 12-year-old that was in need, you would want to protect them. You would want to be, like... Mm.
So would you say that's the one?
I think the letter writing one is for me, because I just think it's a fantastic piece of filmmaking. But, like, that, there's a couple of other scenes like that where you're like, wow, like, really doing something here.
Killian, what about you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I really like the morning inspection scene with Edward Norton. I just think the visual comedy of is just so well done. It's just like all the little bits. Like the treehouse, and he's like, you know, or he's like doing an inspection. And
it could result in a death.
It could result in death.
It could result in a death or something.
Just that, like, you know, like the scout inspection. It's just so based on truth. Like, scout inspections are really like, they're like your shirts, you know, your shirt sleeve. But it is all based around danger, and these are kids. You know, like we are, like, you know, you're like little kids, and you're just given axes and knives and shit like that.
Yeah,
and it's kind of, I liked playing that. It is slightly dark comedy. Mm. And I thought it was so funny, and then, like, culminating with him, like, you know, going into the tent and lifting up the, like, it's Shawshank Redemption or something.
The Rita Hayworth poster, funny. Like
you wouldn't see it. Like.
I love how he comes out of the tent as well with a cigarette, like lit, and, like, you know, he's smoking and then, like, puts it out. Okay, let's do inspection.
You know? a slight, I suppose a word on social services was just that. I love the fact that she's almost like she's almost like, I don't want to say like an alien, but like she's almost like this not human. I mean, I know they kind of dehumanize her by calling her social services all the time, but like I just love how she just comes in at the end. This, like, you know,
she's the baddie, you know, but like not really.
No remorse. He's gonna get electric shock, and we love the kid now because we've seen the kid. So like she's just pure. Yeah. You know, bad, but like, and then the whole thing at the end with the, when they're on that roof and it's all dark, you just see their silhouettes walking on the
blue
roof,
like, and stuff, like,
looked fantastic. Yeah. Like, it looked really good. Yeah.
I'm trying to think, I don't know, you say like otherworldly or whatever, for like you're choosing the right actress with Tilda Swinton, that like she has this quality of, like, I don't know.
I believe she's kind of, with respect, a robot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's a good actor, that's why.
Yeah. Best April Fool's joke I ever got done in on was, it was like some headline. Maybe you got done by it as well. But it was just some like fake headline that said Tilda Swinton is announced as the next drummer for the White Stripes. Everyone believed it. And I was like, that really just speaks to Tilda. It really speaks to like who Tilda Swinton is. That, like,
you could believe it.
Like. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I didn't know she played the drums. But,
no questions. I have no follow-up questions to that. Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Next, what's next? Yeah.
I don't have any notes left. The only thing I'll say is, because I was concerned that Because like I watch these with my girlfriend, who's kind of like me, similar attitude to me. If anything, she's slightly more dismissive of them. But with this one, like I watched the first maybe half of it in work, just on my lunch, and then I watched the second half with her, and she was like, "I didn't see the first half, but this is the best movie by far that we've watched." So I was, really? Like, I was like, "Hey, look at that!" Like it obviously wasn't just because I watched it by myself. There actually is something to this one. So I just thought, yeah, that's.
And definite. I picked this one, and like you can, and people listening will know that, yeah, there was a good few choices, and I did pick this.
Yes.
One. So just like, so that would mean like pretty good taste. Like I probably have pretty good taste. Yeah,
I would say so. I mean, I really didn't think. I thought I'd be tolerating these movies till the end, but this was one that I actually enjoyed from start to finish.
That's so nice.
That's all. That's all I've got.
Plotty,
you know,
plotty.
Plotty, now I know what I like.
Yeah. I shouldn't have pointed that out to you.
I think you like Grand Budapest then, or is that before?
That's next.
Or
that's, next.
That's next.
And that
I'm
is
surprised
quite,
no one took that.
I'm surprised nobody has gone for that, because that's probably, in my memory, his best one.
It seems like this like big peak that's coming up. Of
this is his. This is his best one. This is his. Maybe this or Royal Tenenbaums, but I think this is his best film.
We're gonna let's get our ratings on the table. Can't well you're okay. gonna slap your rating.
Okay,
down.
Let's show. Yeah. The table thuds.
Yeah, exactly. Killian, since you're our guest, you can go first. What would you give this out of a 10?
Out of a 10, 8.5, maybe 9,
8.5,
9 out of
10.
Okay,
high score.
Andy,
what did I give Life Aquatic?
Gave it a 9.
I'm going to give this a 9 too, but it's a better 9. 9.1.
How would you give it 9.25? 9.25.
I didn't know you could go into 0.25.
I didn't either until right now.
You could do what you want. I will not take a 9.3 or a 9.4. It's 0.25 to 5, 5
that's
to 7,
so
5.
So muddled.
Why is that muddled?
9.1.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that.
Just give that another go there. Terry, what about you?
So what are you going with?
9.1.
9.25 then, yeah.
9.1.
No, because you've gone over the 9, so you go up to 9.25. We're not doing 10 points.
I can't believe that we're arguing about this.
I can.
Okay, 9.25.
There we go.
You all know what my
he
real
did,
score
he
is.
He did, yeah, he did invert it,
yeah.
Thomas. So it's like, we know
I'm
going to
give this. I'm going to give this a 9.75. Because blown away, George. Blown away.
So this is your favorite?
This is my favorite, and I did not think it would be.
Look at this. Wow, Killian, you have such great taste.
No, yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Remember I was saying that? Yeah.
I've seen this one twice before this, and like it was the first Wes Anderson Blu-ray I ever bought. Oh. Never mind those DVDs. Oh. They're all gone in the trash, but Blu-ray. And I was so surprised at how much I loved this time around. Because I did like it the last two times. But in my head canon, it was always like, oh yeah, that was, you know, he's on the upward again after Darjeeling and, you know, I love Fantastic Mr. Fox. But like this one, I was like, oh yeah. But it was like the kind of forgotten one. You know, it's kind of the one that is like, you know, lost in the mix or whatever. But I loved this. There was no moment in this film where I wasn't completely locked in. I had a big grin on my face for the majority of the movie.
Yeah.
And then,
well, that's
some glistening as
of
well.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good place. That's a good place to put a cap on it, unless anyone's got anything else to say about it.
Brilliant. No, so that's top of the peak
like
for me.
Brilliant. What a success.
Nice. Yeah.
It's all downhill from here. Well, should we get our plugs in then?
Sure. Killian, do you want to plug? Apart from that other podcast,
well,
it's fine. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I have another I have a podcast that is. I think, you know, we got to be like the online comedians, guys, and we need to up each other, right? We need to be podcasters. Need to borrow a bit from that. And no, I have a podcast called MK Ultra Film, which is me and my friend Mark, and we review films through voice messages.
Brilliant.
And, it's a lot of fun. It's sporadic in its release, but it does exist somewhere. So just look at it.
Brilliant.
You can find it on iTunes, podcatcher of choice, all that stuff.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Cool. Brilliant. Anything else to plug at all?
Well, when is this going out?
Monday week.
Yeah, no, I've got a gig on. Well, you know, I plugged this to just use to. I've got a gig on Saturday with my band. If you guys are interested in coming, it's free.
Band.
It's free.
My favorite price.
Yeah.
where are you playing?
We're playing in Dunleary in the Lighthouse.
Oh,
in Dunleary.
I know it.
Wow.
It's a dart right away. But
yeah.
Excellent.
I'm a Northsider still. Andy's not in the Principality of Dublin anymore.
So where the fuck are you?
I'm in Arklow.
Oh, okay. Do
I have nothing funny to add about that.
I'm in Arklow.
I felt like that was just,
they're outside. They can hear me.
felt like all's fine. Like a sign. Anything. Just holding up a sign. Can't talk here. It's like one of those tidy towns. Like, yeah, sure is great. Sure is great here, guys. Please help. Just see someone looking in through the window.
What kind of music did your band play? And what's the name of your band?
We play. We're called the Sleaze. We play blues rock.
Nice.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, blues rock. It's kind of teen angst vibes.
And is it all your original stuff, or is it?
We only play. Well, that's our thing. We only play originals.
Wow.
Oh, we fantastic. Did actually. This year we were like, let's do a cover, and we were like, it's a good way to learn. We were like, okay, let's do a cover, and we tried to do Thin Lizzy's Vagabond.
Well,
it just did. We couldn't do it. Like,
I mean,
we just,
Thin Lizzy.
We're not a covers band.
Thin Lizzy is not easy either. Let's.
Yeah. No, it's so hard. Their music is so hard to play. It's so fast. And like,
I remember
so many different things going on.
I remember listening to Dave Grohl talk about trying to do a Police cover. And he said, he's like, my hands were killing me. And he's like,
really?
And he's like, how do they play this stuff every night? Like he said, like he found
down, 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 down.
He's like, how do they play this every night? Like,
bleeding.
Yeah, I mean, not to get us off too much of a course here, but the Police are a mad band, aren't they? Like, great.
I was only listening to them today.
They're fucking good.
I haven't listened to them in about 4 years. It's mad they even said that. I was listening to them earlier.
I would say I've never purposefully listened to them either. I've never gone like,
I'll stick on the Police.
Yeah, that's never happened. But they when they come on, I'm not like angry.
But like, any of their songs could come on, and I'm like, okay. And I would imagine if somebody tried to make that today, you'd get that kind of Bruno Mars, you know, hit of it that it was like. Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't like anything else we're doing today, but it'll break through. Like,
yeah, probably.
I'm going to get our plugs in.
Sure,
Jerry.
Hit us.
You can find us on Twitter at WSGA Pod. You can find us on Instagram. What's so great about Pod? Yeah, where we you can find links to everything we do there, including merch. You can now tip us on Ko-fi. Uh-huh. There's a link there. If you don't want to subscribe, you can buy us a coffee, or you can sign up to the Patreon.
Ooh, the Patreon. Thank you for mentioning that, Andy. So over there behind the paywall, we have two tiers. We have our Pay What You Want tier. That's our Hungry Hearts tier, where literally I think the minimum is €1. And you get access to four episodes per month. So you're getting one a week, as well as on the main feed. You're getting eight off us in total.
No complaints.
Yeah.
You can't complain.
Yeah, you can't complain. So that tier, you know, you get your four. For our big shots, for our $5 tier, €4.50, we don't know what it is in sterling.
Frankly, we don't want to know.
Yeah. you get the exact same thing, but also you get some merch, and you're actually going to be getting a bonus episode. So for our four episodes on the Patreon, you get access to all our back catalogue stuff. So you get like our What's So Great About MCU, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, What's So Great About 90s Action Movies, What's So Great About Big Willy's Flops, a.k.a. Big Will Smith's Bad Movies, Big Bad Will Smith's Bad Movies. And then you get a bunch of other stuff there. So we have a bunch of top fives. We just did a top five sporting moments. We've got our top five needle drops in movies. We've got a bunch of Pitch It in H's, where we used to pitch each other movie ideas. One plays producer, one plays screenwriter. We've also got our Put It in H back on the Patreon.
By popular demand.
Yeah, you'll be having one Simpsons episode per week on the Patreon. And for the $5 backers,
per month. Yeah, let's just put that in the bud.
Excuse me. Okay. Excuse me. Look how much you have to get through here, Andy. You've got
per day.
You can cut 80% of this.
I'm fucking going here 5 minutes.
You could cut 80% of this Patreon. I meant to say that to you off mic. We can cut about 80% of this out. I won't, but I'm just saying.
Surprise me in rehearsal, as you would say, Andy. And also, though, for the $5 backers, we are introducing a Q&A, AMA, whatever you want to call it, for exclusive access for that there. You'll get that once per month as well there. Now, if you can't afford...
He's got more.
If you can't afford to subscribe to the Patreon, I mean, I just said you can pay whatever you want. So, I'm not buying it, but whatever. If you can't afford it, you can do me a favor. You can give me a rating or a review. Now, Andy.
Yes?
In this movie, our two characters are age 12. If you add 1 and 2 together, you get 3. But I don't want a 3-star review. I want a 5-star review. Oh,
well, how does he do it?
Every
how does
time.
He do it?
I was thinking maybe it's like $89 or whatever they get in the tips.
I'm still doing the math. Wait a second. Yeah. That checks out.
That's fast, man. Yeah.
So give us a 5-star review on iTunes, on Spotify, on whatever your podcatcher choice. Really helps get some more ears on the product. Gets us back in the charts. Puts you back in our hearts.
Unbelievable. God, he's good.
Now,
he's very good.
If you've made it this far, you've done the Lord's work. Oh, and before I forget, I want to say a big thank you to Neil Murray, who does our amazing theme song for both here and the Patreon. I keep forgetting to thank him. So, Neil.
There you go.
You're great. You can find Neil as Cable Crusader on Twitter and Housewives on YouTube, where you find a lot of his stuff there.
And most importantly, a big thank you to you, Killian, for joining us for this
marathon
epic pod. Thank you very much for giving up your time. And I really appreciate it. I noticed at the start that you're actually holding your mic, and I wanted to tell you that we can stop if you need to put that in like a glass or something, but I really appreciate that you are holding that whole time.
I need to work out the old body, so it's been good. I've been like,
it's win-win.
Yeah.
You should see my left arm is
specifically
like, you see that I'm holding up to the webcam.
Wow,
see that?
Whoa. Jeez, whoa.
It's trebled in size.
I feel intimidated. On that note, folks, thanks very much for listening. I love yous.
There you go. There it is.
All right, I said it.
Yeah, you're not getting away without saying it. I do my whole spiel. The least you can say is say you love it. And of course, you get the big L from me when you sign up to the Patreon. That's also a perk.
Big L, would that not mean like the big loss?
No, the big L.
I was thinking that just today when you were talking about big L's. Doesn't big L mean big
I
loser?
I just have one thing. All right.
I'm great. Yeah. I'm just glad we got that in at the end.
Fine.
On that note.
Fine. I will tell you I love you when you pay for the Patreon. Oh, it just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? It's perfect.
On that note, folks, we're going to go. And we'll catch you next week for the Grand Budapest, right?
Yes,
Grand Budapest.
Yeah, Grand Budapest.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, smooth. Catch you next week.
C'est le temps de l'amour, le temps des copains et de l'aventure. Quand le temps va et vient, on ne pense à rien malgré ses blessures. Car le temps de l'amour, c'est long et c'est court. Ça dure toujours, on s'en souvient. On se dit qu'à 20 ans, on est les rois du monde. Et qu'éternellement, il y aura dans nos yeux tout le ciel bleu. C'est le temps de l'amour, le temps des copains et de l'aventure. Quand le temps va et vient, on ne pense à rien malgré ses blessures. Car le temps de l'amour, ça vous met au cœur beaucoup de chaleur et de bonheur. Un beau jour, c'est l'amour et le cœur bat plus vite. Car la vie suit son cours et l'on est tout heureux. Le temps de l'amour, le temps des copains.
toujours, on s'en souvient. On s'en souvient. On s'en souvient.